Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Hey, marketers. Today with me, I have Ian Cleary. He is known for content marketing and has a tool called Outreach Plus, used to grow traffic. Hey, Ian.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. You're in Europe now, right?
I am indeed. I'm based in Ireland, so I have an office at the end of my garden.
Very cool. So, yeah, we just spoke to Ian, and seems like Ian has to change his About Me page on the website. But, you know, it's normal. You know, I actually looked at mine, too, and I was like, oh, this needs an update so bad, like a couple days ago.
Well, it's just the way the industry moves. You're constantly moving, and that's what I like about the industry as well. In the marketing industry, things are changing, so you have to evolve as the industry changes. But sometimes you miss changing your social presence and your about page, and you know something gets missed.
Yeah, but the funny thing is we move so fast, and we're always chasing the next thing and growing so hard, you know, that we don't look back at the old content, right? Like, there are so many ways to repurpose the old content and then change stuff in there. But for most part, we just chase the new thing where, I don't know, you can tell me, because you're the content marketing guy, how much would you say it matters when it comes to Google, right? Like the time spent creating new content or going through some old content and really fluffing that up and making it great.
Yeah, I mean, I do revisit old content. My next post next week is an old piece of content. I done a post last year, content marketing tools for 2017. So I'm updating that for 2018 because some of the tools are on the list and no longer in business. And there's some new tools that I want to promote. And that's going to generate me more shares, more links, and it's not a big effort to update that content. So, like, if somebody comes to your site and lands on a piece of content you wrote a year ago, and that's not relevant or valuable anymore, I mean, that's the first impression that potential customer has of you. So you shouldn't have content on your site that's just wrong, you know. So I look at older content where I feel, oh, actually, you know, that tool is gone, or this tactic doesn't work as well anymore. I want to refresh that. And then I resend it out to everybody else. And it's an updated piece of content. So I'm constantly updating the older content. So the older content's getting better all the time.
So how much time do you spend updating old content versus creating new content?
Probably more spending on new content. I'd say 75% on new content and 25% on existing content I have.
What kind of signals do you see from Google after you update something? Does the traffic pick up or what happens?
Well, it depends. I mean, if you do more promotion and you end up getting more links back to your content, well, then generally you'll see that your content will go up in ranking in Google. So it depends on, you have to get out and promote that content to get the links to it, you know, because without additional links, they're probably not going to change much.
And that's what I wanted to talk about. We've been talking on this podcast for the last maybe week or two, mostly about content marketing. And now I kind of want to start getting into promoting this content, you know, because even if you have really good pieces, but no one sees them and you're just hoping Google will rank them, you know, I feel that's not a good strategy.
Yeah, it just doesn't work anymore. You might have seen a report from BuzzZumo, did a report on what's the average number of links for a piece of content, you know, and like the vast majority of content gets zero links from external websites. So if external websites are not linking to your content, you typically won't rank anywhere for it. So we talk a lot about inbound marketing. You know, inbound marketing is the dream. You write a piece of content, somebody comes, visits your website, buys your products and services, and then you sit back and smoke cigars, you know.
Right.
But that's not the real world. The real world is you have to do outbound marketing to get inbound marketing. So, and especially if you're an early stage startup when nobody knows about you, you have to get out there, you have to identify the influencers, you have to promote your content. And that's one of the reasons we built a tool, Outreach Plus, and that's to help you automate sending personalized emails to people to, you know, and one part of that is to reach out to promote your content. You know, so yeah, you definitely have to do, you know, I focus on less content, but more promotion.
Yeah, and that's a very key thing you just touched on. But, you know, when you reach out to influencers, right? And if you're starting out in blogging or in content creation, you know, there's not really usually a win-win. So how do you pitch them to promote your content?
Well, you involve the influencers in your content is the first step, you know, because so, you know, I advised a software company recently, they were writing their very first blog post and they got 2,000 shares. Now, the reason they got 2,000 shares is because they reached out to key influencers in the industry and asked for their feedback, a tip to include. So then they included 50 influencers in their content. So when you do that, all of a sudden the influencers know you, know what you do. They'll share the content to their audience. You'll get some of their audience visiting the site. So you're taking advantage of the influencers. That's one way. Another approach is podcast interviews is a great way of getting 20, 30 minutes of somebody's time, and you get to know them, they get to know you, and that helps as well, you know, with your traffic and building your own influence. By engaging influencers, that helps build influence yourself.
Yeah, I like that idea a lot. What other free outbound strategies do you recommend to clients? We'll get into the paid ones later, but the free ones for now.
Sure. I mean, I do some social media outreach. So, I identify who has talked about similar type of content if I'm promoting content, and I reach out to them via Twitter. You know, email, reaching out via email is a free strategy to use. So I suppose social and email. There are a range of different channels as well where you can promote your content, you know, on other sites where you find relevant communities where you can share the content. So I'll give you a tactic, you know, on LinkedIn, for example, if you're a member of a group on LinkedIn, it's not good to just post your content and go, hey, here's my latest blog post. But what's okay to do is reach out on LinkedIn and say, I'm writing this post, I'd love your feedback. And then when you publish the post, say, hey, thanks very much for your feedback. Thanks, John, Mary, Paul, Peter, Pat, for all your feedback. Here's the post as a result of that. And that's a way of, you know, rather than just sharing a post and then dumping and running, it's like, you know, involving the community or that group in your content and then reaching out to them when the content's produced, thanking them and mentioning them in the post.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. The only part which I don't like about that strategy is if you do it on LinkedIn, hopefully you're not writing on LinkedIn. You're taking people back to your blog post because, you know, keeping your content on someone else's platform, you're building their business, not your own.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about in a group. So you're posting your link back to your website in a group, not actually writing, you know, sharing it on their platform and keeping people there.
So other than LinkedIn and placing influencers in the content that you're writing, any other tips for getting your content out there?
Yeah, there's a range of different platforms. Like Triber is a useful platform to get connected with interesting people. And there's different groups in Triber. It's a content sharing platform. So you join a relevant group based on what you're interested in. And, you know, people will share your content. And if you find some relevant content from there, share it. Theirs, and that's usually a good platform. But it's find groups like that that have similar people in your industry and get that sharing going through that as well.
What about paid ways? Because I know I looked on your website a little bit and you had a couple different platforms you mentioned to promote paid content. So let's go into that.
Yeah, I mean, Facebook ads is a useful way of promoting your content, but you need to make sure that you've got a funnel at the back of it. So it's no good just sending them to a piece of content. If you're sending them to a piece of content, then you need to, you know, look at, well, how am I going to take people to the next stage? Can I build an email opt-in, for example, to the next stage? So I have used Facebook ads before, and one of the best ways of doing it is there's a little pixel you can put on your site which tracks visitors to existing blog posts. And then you can build up an audience of people that went to existing blog posts around a particular category. And then when you write another blog post around that category, then you can target that audience. So you know that they were interested in this type of post already. So that's a good way of driving them back.
That's interesting. I haven't heard of that method. That's super smart. How would you target them then? So let's say people went to the content marketing category on your website, right? And they've read a couple articles on content marketing, and now you have a new article that came out, 50 best ways to do content marketing in 2018 or something along those lines. How would you pitch that on Facebook when you think about description, headline, call to action?
Well, the thing about it is you have to make this post look like a natural post that you're writing to a friend as a post, because if you get too fancy with your headlines and too catchy headlines in Facebook, people go, well, that's just an ad. So you need to make sure it doesn't look like an ad. So I generally would open up with a question. So it's just you get people thinking, are you interested in X? And then give them why there's a good reason why, you know, in this post. I'd start giving some of the tips within the post. So it looks like just I'm sharing this post. Here's a couple of useful tips from it. If you want to read more, here you go. So it's trying not to make it look like an ad as much as possible.
Interesting. Other than Facebook ads, what other paid platforms do you use?
I don't use any other paid platforms because I do, you know, basically I write detailed content. I use my own tool, Outreach Plus, to reach out to relevant people. So I'd reach out to influencers. I'd reach out to people that have complimentary articles to say, hey, you link to mine and I'll link to yours. So if you have a 50 content marketing tools article, I'll reach out to somebody that's got a guide on content marketing and say, hey, if you link to my tools post, I'll link to your post within the guide. So everybody wins. I'll reach out to people that have, you know, resources where they have resources related to content marketing and they may link to me. So I generally focus majority of the time on smarter promotion tactics that don't require payment.
Okay, yeah, because one of the articles I've seen on your website, you mentioned some paid promotion tools. One of them is Outbrain, one is Taboola.
Yeah.
So have you used those or not
yeah, yet? I've used them before. So what they do is they advertise within content on other people's sites. So for example, if it's content marketing and there's a big content marketing site that allows them ads at the end of a blog post, you'll often see, oh, here's related content, and a lot of that is not on their site. So it's links off to other people's sites. And they can work, you know, they can be effective as well. If you're good with your targeting, they can be effective.
Yeah, Triber is also in the paid promotion tool. So is that paid or is that a different type of platform?
Well, there's two options in it. There's a free option and then there's a boost post basically option. So you can pay $5 to boost your post to put to the top of the queue, or you can just use the unpaid. Typically, I use the unpaid.
How do you choose which content to push out?
In what way?
Well, so let's say you have 10 or 12 pieces of content you wrote about in a month, right? And one of them will probably get the biggest push, right? Because there's only so many resources that you have. So maybe free, you will try a bunch. But for paid, you know, maybe if you only have money for one, like which one would you choose? How would you choose that? What metrics are you looking at?
Yeah, what I'm looking at is when I do out my posts, I do, here's my normal weekly post and here's my pillar content. Pillar content I would generally produce once a month maximum, and it's a much more detailed post, or maybe it's a utility that I've built, or maybe it's a research report I've done. They're the ones where I'm targeting more competitive keywords, so I know I'm going to have to do a lot more promotion on that. So I'll wait for them, bigger piece of content, that I go, okay, well, this is the, you know, this is really important. This is the one I want to rank for, where I'll get more traffic and, you know, because there's more keyword searches on it. So then I'll identify them. And so for the pillar piece of content, I'm going to regularly promote them. If I'm doing guest posting on sites, I'm going to start promoting them as well, because like I said, these are ones hard to rank on Google, so I need ongoing promotion, but they're searched for a lot.
So if you start promoting it and you're actually doing paid, how long would you run the ad, and what's your testing method to ensure that it's making, you know, the right profit or you know, getting the right numbers that you're looking for?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, sometimes I'm just using it to boost awareness to a specific audience. So I'm not looking for, you know, the funnel side of things where I may not have opt-ins, or that may not be the requirement. But what I would generally do is email subscribers is generally one thing I'd really look at, because I don't care. It's like how many visitors, how many clicks or reads. A lot of it's going, well, if I can build an email subscriber, then I can convert an email subscriber immediately or over time into a sale. So I'm looking at, you know, what's my cost to build an email subscriber by driving relevant people to a piece of content.
If someone listening right now is thinking about their remarketing strategy, you know, getting the pixel on, seeing it, like, what budget would you recommend them to start with, and how many days?
I mean, to start off with the low budget, just to see how things are going, it might be $5 to $10 a day. You know, I wouldn't spend too much initially and spread it out. If you're doing a weekly piece of content, you might just do a day's promotion initially for a piece of content, and then next week do another day, and then see what results you're getting. And if you're getting good results, well, then, of course, you can start increasing your budget.
Let's talk about this pillar content versus weekly content. Can you describe each one?
So your pillar content is really just an important piece of content that's, you know, it's going to be difficult to rank for, so you have to put more effort into it. So when I write a piece of content, I might write a 1,000-word post as a normal post, but my pillar piece of content might be 5,000 words. So it's going into super detail. It's, you know, it's the most detailed guide you'd get on a particular topic. So I do one post, which is a list of, hey, here's 50 tools, you know, and then 50 tools. People share that a lot. People like it a lot. But it's not, you know, it's not the most important piece of content. Where if I write a step-by-step guide to content marketing, I want to rank for content marketing, which is very difficult to rank for. So I'm going to put in a ton of effort into that and do my 5,000-word post. And then every opportunity I get to, when I'm, you know, guest posting on sites or, you know, talking about things, I'll point people to that pillar piece of content.
When you think of your last 12 or 13 months, what's the one piece of content that did the most for you, the most popular one, most engaging one?
I did a guide on social media analytics, and instead of calling it a guide on social media analytics, I come up with this framework called the Social Media Analytics Compass. And I involved a lot of influencers in this content, and all it was is basically the 8 things you need to monitor with social media analytics. And because I involved a lot of influencers in the content, it was shared like 5,500 times. So it was quite a popular piece. Now, if I didn't involve the influencers, it may have been shared 1,000, 2,000 times. So it was a big difference, and it's continuously shared because it's not just a list of things, it's actually a framework. I call it a framework. So coming up with a framework like that is always useful in your business. Like, I have the Social Media Analytics Compass. I have the 5-step Elevate program for content marketing. I have the Prism framework for social media, because these frameworks are unique to you, and they generally drive a lot more attention, traffic, shares, links, everything.
What are some strategies that you use to find the right niches and then to reach out to the people?
Yeah, I mean, for guest post opportunities, a lot of it is relationship driven. So it's easier if you have some form of relationship. So for example, if I'm doing, there's a bunch of influencers and I want to connect with them and I want to go the top. So I want to, like, the top 20 influencers or websites. If I can run a podcast and get to interview them, then at the end of the interview, I'd say, hey, I've been following your blog for a long time. I see you do guest posts. Is there any chance I could submit a couple of posts? And if they're high enough quality, maybe you'd consider posting them. It's very difficult to say no on the phone like that. So that's, if you want a tactic that's going to work like 50% of the time, providing you have good content, that's going to be a better approach. The alternative is then is when you, if you're not going to connect with them on that level, involve them in your content, because now there's a connection and they get to know you. So you, they need to get to know you. And the third level is, if you're not going to do that, then is reaching out on social media, tracking them on social media, and start interacting with them, and then reach out. So it's really about making sure it's a warm connection as opposed to a cold one. They have to have heard about you before. You've had to have some sort of conversation with them, some sort of form of interaction. It's a waste of time just sending it unless you've had that first. When you have that interaction, then it's reaching out, and it's just showing that you understand that person, you understand the audience, you understand the content they write. Most pitches I get start with "Hi there." So I'm not actually going to read that. If somebody didn't bother find my first name, I'm not going to read the email. So just understand that people are not reading your email if you start with "Hi there." If you start with "Hi Ian," and then say, you know, "I've been following your site for a long while, and here's one particular article I really liked, and I implement this in my business. And by the way, I write articles around similar topics. Would it be okay if I sent you a couple of suggestions that possibly you'd consider me?" You know, so don't be pushy. And all you're looking for in your first email is yes or no. So if the question, if it's more than a yes, no question or answer, well, then you're doing something wrong. You don't want them to make them think. If they say yes, send me on, you know, examples, then you're halfway there. Then it's important just to send really good examples. But people do it the lazy way. They don't interact with anybody. They don't know the person. They send a pitch with irrelevant articles, and they don't ask for permission to send it. So that's like 95% of, or even more, probably 99% of pitches are that. So if you're different and you put the effort in, it's not difficult to get guest posts on sites.
And I think this is something a lot of listeners don't want to hear, but I got to completely agree. I find that reaching out to the people I know is the easiest way to do outreach. And then when I have my assistants reach out, just cold email, we have a very, very low response rate for anything like that, you know? So I do agree completely.
Well, I got an outreach email from you, which is a good email, because it actually said, "Hey, Ian, you know, we've been following your stuff on Razor Social, and I've seen you've launched Outreach Plus." And I'm going, "Oh, great. Actually, somebody researched and figured out that I actually launched a new tool as well." So the new tool is close to my heart. So it's very easy when you start talking about a new project somebody is on. So somebody's just after written a book. That's another thing. Go, you know, that if you want to get that response, you need to personalize those emails and send it out. And that's why I developed Outreach Plus, because if you want to send out 50 emails, you don't want to be spending all that time doing that personalization. So you create a spreadsheet, you upload a spreadsheet, you send the emails and personalize them automatically.
Yeah, and you know, we've worked hard to get the team to actually care and send out the right emails, but I'll still say outreach for us to do guest posts is much more difficult, and to get on other people's podcasts than when we just ask people to get on our podcast, you know, because we have listeners. And I'll give you this. We reached out to maybe 50 people, and we had 30 slots filled up within maybe 6 days. People saying, "Look, there's no more places to book." I'm like, sorry, it's, you know, we just don't have any more room. And we never get that response when we try to guest post or do things like that.
Yeah, it's a little bit harder, but you need to put a little bit more work into the guest posting side, you know?
Yeah, however, I do like what you said. You know, when you do get people on and you give them their, you know, 5 minutes of fame and you talk to them, then it is much easier to say like, "Hey, Ian, you know, do you allow guest posts?" And "Can I put something on your blog?" And, you know, but we'll have a conversation regardless, because we've talked.
So podcasting is a great way of building the relationship with the influencers. You know,
it does make sense. What are some of the methods that you use to get emails? I see a couple things on your website, but I would like to know what you think works the best as lead magnets and those type of things.
Okay, so on Outreach Plus, what I'm doing is, on Outreach Plus, you'll see that I don't have any sidebar anymore. and I just want a good user experience and somebody's reading the blog. Every single blog post I do, I put in a content upgrade as an opt-in. So that's basically, if I write a post, at the moment I wrote a post about influencer outreach, and you'll see in that post there's an influencer outreach checklist you can download. So people often don't have the time to read the whole content. It's a 2,000-word post. So they'll link to it and reference it, which is what I want, and they'll download a shortened version of the post, which is just a checklist. So in my last post, and then also actually when they're leaving the site, if they leave the site, then I'll pop up an opt-in for that as well. So for every post, there's an opt-in, which is directly related to that post, specific to that post. So my opt-in rates on my last post was 30%. So 30% of all visitors opted into email because of this tactic. Typical, you know, conversion rates would be 2 or 3%, or maybe you might get 4 or 5, but you're not going to get 30. Now, will I get 30% for every post? Probably not, but I'll probably get between 10 and 40% conversion rates for email subscribers. So I'm doing less content, more detailed content, and every piece of content I'm focusing on, how can I get my 30% conversion? Because as you know as well as anybody, that building that email list is extremely important.
Yeah, what's funny is when I'm clicking around your Outreach Plus blog, almost anywhere I click, I get a pop-up to subscribe.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, it's interesting.
So I use Opt-in Monster. Opt-in Monster is the tool I use for any of that work.
Opt-in Monster. How long did it take you, and how much did you spend building this tool? You know, I have friends building apps, and it's some of them cry halfway through before it's even done.
Well, we found a developer based in the UK that had built a lot of this tool already, but he wasn't in a position to sell it. So we got involved with him and the company, and then we spent 6 months building it out. So yeah, it took us 6 months after. So he was probably on it 6 months, and then we done another 6 months. So it was probably a year altogether to get the tool out.
Is that what you would recommend to people? You know, because a lot of bloggers don't have anything to sell, and you know, plugins and different apps like this are just a no-brainer. But the development, like if you were talking to someone starting out, like what would you tell them?
Well, it depends on our experience. So I was lucky that I had 15 years working in software companies prior to marketing. So I'm probably better in software than marketing. So yeah, I've been longer there. So my last job before I started working on my own maybe 10 years ago was running a development team, you know, building a CRM product. So I had a ton of experience building it. Without that experience, it would have been extremely challenging. You know, I needed that experience to deliver this product. So I would say don't go into it unless you've got a really strong CTO, a chief technical officer that you can trust that's going to build a scalable, well-built application. That's a good step. Now, typically with a CTO, they're good at the underlying technology, but they're not good at the user interface and the usability and the user experience. If you have no experience in that, you need to get somebody else in that area, you know. And there's so many different areas of software. So you do your design, build the underlying technology. You start thinking about the infrastructure. Like just to frighten you, we're on Azure, but we looked at Amazon Web Services, and it's very complicated. If you want a reliable platform like that, there's a lot of things to consider, and you consider all the security and you know, putting load balancing servers on it. So there's a lot in it if you're actually going to take it serious. But I would say if it's a fully blown web application like ours, if it's like a plugin on WordPress and there isn't much user interface on it, then it's a little bit easier. But either way, you need a strong technology guy as a partner. And don't go to an agency and say, hey, build this for me, because they'll build it. You'll change your mind on what's needed. The customers will tell you different things are needed, and you'll just be constantly paying the agency.
That sounds like really solid advice. Now we'll see if you know your numbers. So I'm looking at this website, and walk us through your funnel. When people sign up to the email list, around how many do you have subscribed, and then the percentage that moves to the 14-day trial, and then the percentage that moves to a paid? That's always so interesting for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, for the
Outreach Plus, yeah. So you have the email list, the 14-day free trial, and then you have a bunch of different paid options. But just how many people move along the funnel?
Yeah, at the moment, I won't share the numbers because we actually only launched. In November, we done a pre-launch, and then we closed it. And just then, the beginning of February, we opened it up fully. So it's really, we've only had it available for sale for a month. So at the moment, you know, the conversion rates would be low, but that would be expected at this stage.
Right. But can you share just roughly, we don't want how, you know, know the actual sales, but just interested in the conversion. So even without the email list number, just how many people percentage wise actually move along the funnel? Because curious how your funnel is working out.
Well, I'll tell you, in terms of the, when we done the pre-launch, we had 3,000 people in the funnel, and 5% of them converted to customers. Okay. So what we did is we did a pre-launch where we ran a competition. We got 3,000 people signing up for the competition, and that was a combination of them signing up and some viral sharing, so that when people signed up, we said we'd open it up to the first 100 people. So to be on that list, you had to share out the content across social channels. When they were shared to social channels, that moved them up the list. And that sort of competitive nature, you know, meant that people were excited about joining. So, you know, when we opened it up within that day, 60 customers out of the 3,000 signed up.
Okay. What about the 14-day free trial to paid? You know, I find that's one of the most difficult things when selling these type of products, is getting people from the free trials to actually pay something. Like, what's been your experience with that?
Well, we started at the start is that we didn't want that. You have to give your credit card when you sign up. So, Yes, we'll get less people signing up, but people are more serious about it. So there's a 14-day trial. They get two emails before the 14-day trial is up, but then they move straight onto paid. You know, typically at the moment, we're getting at least 60% of people that are on the free trial are moving onto paid, and we're looking at how we can improve that. But I mean, I could have went, oh, I'll do a free option of the software, which I didn't want to do. Or I could say, hey, there's, you know, free trial with no credit card. But I prefer have less people and more serious people using the software. You know, they are, you know, intending to use the software, and it's proven as well. More people are staying as a result.
Interesting. Yeah, the reason I ask is because I'm working with a friend of mine on marketing in his online course, right?
Yeah.
And what we've done, and it's working okay, but we've charged $67 for the first 3 weeks, and then they move right into the monthly. I was just wondering, based on what you say, like maybe we should try doing like a 7-day or a 14-day free trial. I mean, still taking the credit card, but just getting those people in without getting that first payment, and then seeing if they, you know, still convert.
Yeah, is this training programs, monthly subscription training program?
It's a monthly subscription, yeah. So it's very similar. You're doing annually and monthly. That's why I was wondering.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely split that and see, you know, have two different pages and see what is the rates when somebody signs up. Because I suppose it's like people just don't know what they're getting. No matter how much you explain it through the website, people like to, you know, go in and try it out themselves.
Yeah, the only thing now is, and I think it's killing some of the conversions, is, you know, they don't know what they're going to be getting, but they have to pay $67 to even learn what they'll be getting, and then to get moved to the, you know, monthly. That's why when I was wondering about the free trial, I love the idea of taking a credit card in the beginning, but yeah. I was just wondering, you know, how many stay on, because, you know, you don't want people who just try to get the training and leave too. That's why I was, you know, just...
Yeah, exactly. I mean... We had another product, which was a monthly subscription product, and we don't do the free trial on that one. But I think on the app, it made more sense because people really need to get in there and have a look around, you know. The training might be a little bit easier to explain what people are getting, you know.
Yeah, I got it. Cool, man. I appreciate you coming on. I think we covered a lot. So, Ian, where can people find you?
You can find me on, you know, Razor Social, contact form on Razor Social, or contact form on Outreach Plus gets straight into my inbox, or at Ian Cleary on Twitter.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect, Lee Bell. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.